personal consciousness. So, his spiritual master just looked at him and immediately understood that Gopakumar has some, is not a great interest in liberation, but he's got some interest and he wants to go to that abode, the home of liberation, Mahakalapur, that place beyond the coverings of this universe, but it's not exactly in the Vaikuntha realm, at least certainly not in the sense of being like one of the Vaikuntha planets. It's somewhere in between. But it is beyond matter. So, his spiritual master gives him further instruction. If you recall, the first time his spiritual master just gave him the most basic type of instruction. Gave him the mantra, and that was about it. Didn't tell him whether you chant it out loud or softly, or when, or if it's all the time, or what it means even, or what the results will be. But then, when they met in Jagannath Puri, he gave him little more detailed instruction about how to chant certain formalities or certain aspects to the process of chanting. So now this time he taught Gopakumar more about the chanting. Second time, of course, he gave him three benedictions. One of them we're already seeing, or two of them really, or maybe all three of them, but at least a couple of them we're seeing. Gopakumar is remaining a cowherd boy, and he is remaining in a condition which is such that he does not become seriously interested or attracted to other alternative methods or places. In other words, he remains ignorant, actually. And every time he hears about the next place he's going to go to, it's something completely new to him. So now, his spiritual master teaches him some little more esoteric aspects of the mantra. How to apply the syllables to his body. How to use appropriate mudras, hand gestures, while chanting the mantra. And other details of the process of worship through the mantra. Like touching the syllables, meditating, how to meditate on, well, he taught him how to meditate on the form of the Lord, but the way he did that was by gestures of his hands. That's interesting. He didn't actually talk about it because he was afraid of becoming, if he started talking about the form of the Lord, he felt he would become too overwhelmed and just get totally carried away. And his, you know, relatively composed state in which he could give these, you know, practical instructions to someone who's relatively a lot more neophyte, he would lose that composed state and just go off again into his amazing condition of trance. So he told Gopakumar at the end of this little session of instruction, he told him that through chanting this mantra, you will understand all my instructions, and you will also understand other things that I'm not directly instructing you in, but you will understand them by the power of the mantra. Yes. So this is there in Krishna consciousness. that spiritual master gives instructions, but also if we follow the instructions, and of course particularly in this regard, we've been stressing this activity of chanting and getting special mercy from chanting under the instruction of the spiritual master. But realization comes and further understanding comes as we continue on. Comes from within, actually. Comes from within the heart as we continue on with the process. So instruction is coming from without, from the spiritual master. But there's also the element of some instruction coming from within. And the basis of that is chanting the mantras or rendering service very nicely. And the Lord, Chaitaguru, the spiritual master within the heart, he also gives some enlightenment through the heart. So then, Gopakumar fell at his guru's feet to offer obeisances. As soon as he looked up, his guru was gone again. He is a very remarkable spiritual master, this. He is a very special spiritual master. So, Gopakumar, having received this instruction, further instruction about chanting the mantra, so he started chanting his mantra even more attentively and more reverently than before. And then he noticed a very interesting thing. He noticed his body was transforming from a material one into a spiritual one. Yes. Without the material one dying, there was a transformation of body. Although he remained the same cowherd boy, but the body acquired a spiritual nature. And away he flew through the sphere of the sun, which is the doorway to liberation. You may recall in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna talks about that. Two different routes people may take. One, if they go through the route of the sun, then they can become liberated. But if they take the other route, then they return. They return. So he took that first route that Krishna does mention there through the sphere of the sun to liberation. And as he passed through the universe and started approaching the coverings, he looked back across the 14 worlds and saw them all beneath him. So now we come to the parts which we've written on the board here. So he starts going through the universal coverings. As he goes through each covering, well, first covering is earth. So he sees within that covering, there is the deity of the earth, who is Mother Bhumi. And as he goes through each covering, he sees the immediate presiding deity of that covering or that element, particular element. But he sees the deity of that particular element worshipping a relevant form of the Lord. So when he goes through this first covering, the earth covering, he sees the deity of earth, Mother Earth, Bhumi, and she is worshipping the appropriate form of the Lord. Who would the appropriate form of the Lord be? Varaha. Yes. She is worshipping Lord Varaha. And actually he sees in that area of the earthly covering, he sees tremendous opulence and facilities for enjoyment. Yes. It is not just some sort of, just earth like a thick crust of earth or something like that. But there are features there. So he saw that there in that earthly covering, the opulence and the facilities for enjoyment were millions of times greater than in Brahmaloka. That's quite something, isn't it? Millions of times greater. And he saw Lord Varaha within each hair of his body were all the opulences of the universe. He had not seen that in Lord Mahapurusha. So his conclusion was, this is a higher form of the Lord. More opulent form of the Lord. An interesting thing is that it's explained there, not so much about him, it appears, but it's explained about people who pass through the coverings on their way to being liberated, that as they go through each covering, they're given a body made of that particular element. And, you know, then when they get to the next element, then the body is transformed into that type of element. Otherwise, if they just pass through in some other form, their bodies would be destroyed and their progress would be stopped. And somehow they would get caught there. Anyway, let us just say that at this point he entered the earth covering. Mother Bhumi invited him. Please stay here. He offered his respects and carried on. Continued on. So next was the water covering. So there, the deity of water was worshipping who, would you say, which form of the Lord? Matsya. And he noticed that the facilities for enjoyment and the opulences there were millions of times more than in the earthly covering. Just see. Then he moved on to the fire layer. And the deity there was worshipping who? Say? The fiery Surya. And the opulences and enjoyable facilities were millions of times greater there than in the fiery layer. So like this it goes on. The deity of air was worshipping Pradyumna. Oh, it says here in the overview book. Okay. The deity of ether. Who was the deity? Anyway, little error here, I think. The deity of ether was worshipping who? Aniruddha. The deity of false ego was worshipping Sankarshan. The deity of Mahatattva was worshipping Vasudeva. So he went through all these layers, and each time the facilities and opulences and so on were millions of times greater. So you can just imagine by the time he got to the Mahatattva layer, the layer of Mahatattva, then must have been pretty opulent compared to Brahmaloka. What to speak of compared to here on earth. You wanted to say something? Air is Pradyumna, ether is Aniruddha, false ego is Sankarshan, and Mahatattva, that's correct, Vasudeva. So then he came to Prakriti. He came to Prakriti. And saw the deity of material nature, who was worshipping Mohini, that form of the Supreme Lord. So, she is Subhadra, the daughter of Mother Yashoda and sister of Krishna. Yes, this is explained there in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that this deity of the Prakriti, the primeval material nature, the most subtle form of ignorance, that this is Subhadra. She is, well, she told him, she preached to him sort of, or strongly encouraged him to stay there and said, that I give liberation and I give devotional service. She said, I am a form of the internal potency, which is true, but she is an external expansion of the internal potency, so she is not quite the same. And he noticed that there was a subtle presence of ignorance there. So he felt there's a danger here if I stay. Although he was a little attracted, and she seemed, you know, like benevolent enough, she wanted to help him in his devotional service, but he decided not to stay there. And there, what did he see? He saw living entities with bodies made of pradhan, which is the most subtle and most primeval form of matter. And the opulences and so on and so forth, the different features of that abode, were very amazing. He says words cannot describe them, the opulences there, and the way things were transforming, and the beauty and the activities that the people there with bodies made of pradhan, what they were doing. Words cannot describe them. It was very amazing. So Gopakumar, he didn't want to stay, live there, but he decided to check it out. So he walked around, moved around, had a look, and then passed on, carried on. So coming through that shadowy, that Prakriti layer, it was blackish blue in color. Coming through that shadowy, blackish blue area of subtle and like ultimate ignorance, he came into an area so bright, so splendid with light, he couldn't keep his eyes open. It was so amazing, so brilliantly, dazzlingly effulgent. Then he opened his eyes, gradually tried to adjust his eyes. And what did he see? Who did he see? Lord Mahakala, as brilliant as millions of suns. And Lord Mahakala was the most amazing form of the Lord he had seen so far. He had never seen anything like that. He was sheltering material nature in a very benevolent way, facilitating her pastimes. The Mahapurusha, you know, the other presiding deities, the presiding deities were accepting worship. Lord Mahapurusha on Brahmaloka was ruling material nature in a kind of, you know, sort of forceful way. But here, Lord Mahakala was in a very benevolent, shelter-giving mood, giving shelter to material energy. So he looked at Lord Mahakala and saw that the Lord was changing forms. Sometimes he would become formless. And when this happened, Gopikumar became somewhat bewildered, and it seemed he was about to merge. So then quickly he remembered Lord Jagannath, and then he saw the form of Lord Mahakala again. But then after a little while, Lord Mahakala again became formless, and it seemed like Gopikumar was actually going to merge. But then he was saved by the light beams, some light beams coming from the Lord's reddish toenails. So then he gazed at the beauty of the Lord. He saw the Lord was surrounded by associates, but they didn't have personalities. He saw that the Lord, in that benevolent mood, was sort of at least feeling, or I don't know about relating with, but at least he picked up a mood within the Lord, that the Lord was seeing these people as his devotees. But actually, those people, devotees, let us just say people, they were not really devotees in the sense that they wanted to serve him. But at least they were serving him effectively by being part of his effulgence. So in other words, he is seeing the Brahma Jyoti and how the Brahma Jyoti really is. But the Lord was feeling that these are my devotees in a benevolent type of mood. They were in a condition of obeyed, difference and non-difference. Their separate personalities were dormant and invisible. Hare Krishna. Now I know that's a little sort of hard to grasp, but that's the way it was. That's the way it was. And that's the way it is, actually. We know that in the Brahma Jyoti, there are many, many spirit souls, but their personalities are dormant. So they're just vibrating there as little spiritual particles. They have not exactly merged. The example is given of the green parrot entering the green tree. To our, you know, vision, from our little distant perspective, we may no longer see the green parrot, and therefore someone might think he has actually become part of the tree. But actually he's there. So in a somewhat similar sense, the spirit souls who become impersonally realized, they enter the Brahma Jyoti, they do not exactly merge with it. Although from a distance you don't see them, you just see the effulgence. But they are there in their individual capacities, but their individual personalities and so on are not manifest. They're just vibrating as little spiritual particles. So, Gopikumar saw that. And he saw that, in a sense, they were sort of serving the Lord by being there within the Brahma Jyoti. this is the Lord's pastime, at least, to have his effulgence and have the living entities hovering there. So in that sense, they were taking part in a certain function of Lord Mahakala. So Gopakumar, seeing Lord Mahakala, he was fluctuating between two states of consciousness. One state of consciousness was that this is the most amazing form of the Lord I've seen. Perhaps this is the perfection of life. But on the other hand, sometimes the Lord would become formless, and there'd be some danger that Gopakumar would lose his personality and individuality like the other living entities there, and he might become one of them. So he was frightened. So he was fluctuating between being attracted to Lord Mahakala and thinking, now I've met the Lord. I've found my Lord of the universe, of all the universes. So being attracted like that, and in that state, considering staying there, but then at other times feeling fearful and actually feeling the danger and, you know, being kind of drawn into this impersonal state. Did Gopakumar have the option to merge or not to merge? He had the option to enter or not to enter. You know, we just said that people don't really merge, because merge means you cease to be an individual as such. So these entities there, Gopakumar saw clearly that they were individuals. They had not actually merged. They had entered the Brahma Jyoti. So he had the option. In fact, he was under a type of pressure to merge, and he had to kind of fight against it to retain his individuality. And one time he was fighting, but then he got that special mercy from the beams of light coming from the Lord's toes, and then he resumed his fully personal condition. So while all this was going on, what was Gopakumar doing? He was chanting his mantra. And as he kept chanting his mantra, he was making further progress in the chanting while there in Mahakalapur. And as he was making further progress, he found he was becoming more and more attracted to Lord Madan Gopal and his remembrance of Lord Madan Gopal, and more distant, or gradually he was becoming distant from Lord Mahakala. He was losing interest in Lord Mahakala. This is one of the natural results of his chanting. Wherever he goes, he continues chanting. And initially, there's some period of being attracted to the Lord in that place and that particular place. But gradually, as he continues chanting, he gradually loses interest and becomes impelled forward. Yes, so then he reached a certain point and he thought, I think I better go back to Vrindavan. This is not for me. And if I go back there, somehow or other, if I go back there and keep chanting, then I'll discover something else. There'll be a next stage for me to go on to. And maybe it'll be the stage, the final stage, and I'll find my deity. So he was contemplating going back to Vrindavan, but he didn't yet. While still there, in the distance he heard some singing, and he saw some people.